Who's that character named Sea Salt? A fox in the stables? What
Stop.
is that?
No.
Oh,
No.
no. My early days in the fandom were very much me being the silent audience member. Like I was not artistic. I didn't submit stories or anything, no music, no videos, but I appreciated them. My brain stopped working.
You need to see me every day. You're fine.
It happens. It
You need
happens.
some coffee. Get some coffee and just reboot.
Oh,
Thank you, editors. Bless the editors.
Welcome back to Top Dogs Podcast. For today's episode, we will explore the history and culture of the furry fandom. Join us as we uncover the origins of this vibrant community and discuss its evolution over the years, from the early days of the fandom to the present. We'll dive into topics like the role of conventions, the influence of key figures like Silas Sable, and the diversity that makes the furry community so unique. I'm Stream Arcadet.
I am Whiplash Wolf.
I'm Kit Clawson.
And I'm Trick the Stick, with our lovely guest, Changa Husky.
Hi, I'm Changa Husky.
So, Changa, could you start us off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
I've been in the fandom many decades. My family, or, well, my relation, is Cy Sable and Rod O'Reilly. They're the two people who started the first furry convention, and I've lived with them for the better part of 30 years, and they've been my family. I live in a furry museum, really. I'm a video producer. I make videos for Ferality and content creator, and I've been around a long time. In the fandom.
You've been Beautiful. Making some really impressive videos on TikTok. I've seen the stuff you do, and it's the quality of your videos are absolutely amazing. And honestly, I don't think you get enough views for what you do, because this is absolutely amazing. You got some really good skills.
I do overproduce my TikTok videos. I mean, you know, it's like I spend hours on like 1 minute. But I do go all out for the community showcase. I have a new video I just finished. It's so good. I outdid myself.
I'm looking forward
that
to seeing
sounds
it.
Awesome.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
For the rest of everyone here, how long have y'all been in the fandom?
I joined the furry fandom probably, oh God, I was 19 years old when I started working on my fursuit, if I remember correctly, and I'm 32, so I've been there for 13 years now. So yeah,
wow.
13 years in the fandom. It's been quite a while.
I want to feel like it's been longer than like I've actually been in the fandom, since technically I feel like Sonic kind of brought me into the fandom, but technically I learned more about the fandom when I was 12, back in 2007. So I guess that's what, 17 years almost?
I've been in the fandom probably 15, 16 years also. Discovered
wow.
DeviantArt when I was in high school, and the hot werewolf boyfriends, and it was downhill from there.
Oh. Lazarus shaking his head back.
Aggressively nodding.
Lion King was my furry awakening.
Ooh, mood.
Actually, that's a good one.
It was a good one. I've been a furry pretty much my whole life. I found the fandom. I was 12, maybe 13. So it's been 11 years now for me. Changa Husky, am I right to think you were part of the virtual furry museum team as well?
Yeah, actually, I'd gotten involved, seen the place, dragged Cy over, like, you gotta see this. And it was kind of like just as it was, Sotolo was finishing it, and both me and Cy were like, you need something in here for history. And I had prior, I run conference.com, which is an archive of scanned stuff going all the way back to the 70s. We worked with him, was like, here's some stuff you should have in there. And we basically created the entry, you know, for the history of the fandom. It is Sotolo's project. We just kind of like nudge him, went, you need this. You really need something like this. You know, at least certainly to ground it a bit.
You've been mentioning Cy Sable. A lot of
yeah.
our young younger viewers may have not have known him like you do. Could you tell us a little bit about him and how influential he was for the fandom?
He was there from the start. really, it was his passion that kind of helped push on the fandom right at the earliest stages. Even before it was named Furry, he was starting parties at conventions, things like BayCon and WorldCon and things like that. He was starting parties for anthropomorphic art. He just wanted to find more people like that. At those days, they called it funny animal. It was more, you know, well, funny animal is like animals in the funnies, you know, in the newspaper.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of underground comics and things like that. It came out of like fanzines and all that. But he started having parties. Eventually, they called them furry parties. And sometime around in 1989, he and Rodney, his partner, said, hey, anime fandom just kind of got kicked, you know, into starting their own conventions. Because they were, a lot of anime fans were orbiting a lot of these conventions. And eventually, I think it was BayCon's like, you go do your own. Mark kind of went with Rodney. He's like, hey, why don't we try a furry convention? And they started the first one. About 65 people showed up. It became, well, essentially, it was the first convention. And it lasted all the way into, well, the 2000s before, well, it kind of collapsed. There's a whole history there I could go into. But running conventions are hard. There's an old saying in fandom, you know, how to make a small fortune in fandom is start with a large fortune and run a convention. Because believe me, you'll lose. Oh yeah.
Honestly, like starting a furry business, like a furry convention, is almost like starting a business, right? You have to invest a lot of money because barely people know you, so you have to build yourself a reputation. So in the first few years, just like a business, you're not going to be very much profitable at all, but it's going to put your name on the map. And as people come in every year more and more, then you're going to start, you know, being able to make your money back from all the investment, you know, selling merch, selling t-shirts, those advanced packages when you sign up for the convention, that's how it helps pay for the staff, the equipment, renting the place, because renting a con floor is really expensive. It takes up a lot of money. So
hotels are very expensive. And honestly, most conventions, especially smaller conventions, your best hope is a break even, right? To be able to have the what people pay to get in pays for at least the facilities, because hotels are expensive. And even merch and all that, you don't really make profit. It has to get really big to be able to keep making money. In those early days, you know, it's definitely tricky to do anything past breaking even. Now, mind you, Conference, which was the first convention, first one to break 1,000 people. And that was kind of that nice, you know, moment when the fandom kind of like really started taking off. That was like around 98, I think it was. By then, it had already been going for about 10 years, and a few other smaller cons had started up too.
What were conventions like in the early days of the fandom?
They're not that different, really. I mean, obviously, you look at old footage and it's like all the fashion and all that. But furry conventions sprung out of regular fandom conventions, science fiction, you know, all of that. And so a lot of the same sort of culture, you know, just kind of got pulled in. You had people going around in fursuits, you had panels, you know, video room showing, you know, animation, some differences. And this was, they had pet auctions. Back in science fiction fandom, they'd have auctions for charity where, you know, they called them slave auctions. Mark and Rodney felt it was better just call it pet auction. And, you know, it's usually, you know, you end up with a person, you know, that you want, and they just run around and like help you out or whatever. I don't think anyone does those anymore. Probably other fandoms do. I'm sure Klingons probably do that somewhere.
Oh my God.
Sakura would be happy. Mind you,
I do have a wonderful memory at a Worldcon where the Klingons were going through the hallway. They had like some fursuiters up on like poles, you know, carrying them like they hunted them. And later sold them off. Now, mind you, I'm pretty sure they got together with the fursuiters ahead of time, but it was hilarious.
Oh my god,
that's
great.
I've been prey to a Mandalorian before. So I love when fursuiters are like prey for other cosplayers. It's always such a good trope.
Furries and other fandoms, all the fandoms, we all have kind of a connective tissue of, you know, culture. You know, it all bleeds over. I mean, we're our own unique kind of special something over here. But fans are fans, you know, especially with the other fans are a lot more open, you know, some fandoms a little not as friendly, but we all have some of the same, you know, basic stuff going on.
What was your first convention, even if it wasn't furry?
My first convention actually was last year at FWA with the Top Dogs podcast. You guys made it so memorable for me. I can't wait to do it again this year.
That's going to be great. Yeah. I'm excited for
party time. My first con actually was FWA as well. But instead of it being last year, it was back in 2014 when FWA was much smaller. Like, I think it was like 3,500 people instead of what, 10,000 now?
Yeah, they hit five figures last year in their attendance.
I cannot remember the hotel was, but it wasn't the Marriott. Marriott started in 2015. All I remember it was trying to get used to like everything because you're not really, especially me, I was very introverted back then, even though I had my friends with me. I kind of felt like somewhat anxiety-ridden going to one, but I still had a blast going to regardless because you're surrounded by people who are just like you.
My first con actually was, I think in 2012 or 2013, I went to Fernal Equinox in Toronto. And this is actually where I met my husband for the first time. Back then I was in a relationship, he was as well. But the first time we met, we kind of felt a connection, and we felt something, but we didn't know what it was back then. Eventually, with time, we ended up being together. But Fernal Equinox was my first con. When I heard about conventions and stuff like that, I really wanted to go for my first con with a fursuit, so I tackled the project of making my own fursuit. I still have it today. I was planning to make a new fursuit head for FWA 2024. Sadly, I had too many things going on. It was stressing me out, and even though I was a month ahead of time when I took this decision, I kind of was still a bit too late, so I decided to cancel it for next year. It was quite fun. Fernal Equinox was still kind of small. I think it was in the sub 1,000 people that were attending, and now it has become a lot bigger since. And I think I went to Fernal Equinox three times so far.
First convention, I couldn't tell you the name of it. Well, it's probably a creation convention. Those were media conventions. Oh God, autograph mills. So probably 85? No, it's probably 84. That was probably one where I actually did see Nichelle Nichols. Yeah, I'm old. I've been orbiting the fandom along quite some time, but the first actual one I went to was like Conference 8, I think it was. And that was 96, and I ended up on staff, into it. I'd been on staff for a few years until Mark and Rodney stepped down, and then I was kind of vaguely-ish. Technically I was still on staff. I was still working on the video room. you know, but I've been on staff a bunch of cons.
My first convention was an anime convention of all things, Sabotin. It was a very small convention for what it was. It's the same hotel that we have our convention in called Painted Desert FurCon.
First convention was anime. Here's an interesting piece of trivia. Apart from starting the first furry convention in the late 70s, he and four other people started the first anime fan club in the United States. There were two furries part of that group was called the Cartoon Fantasy Organization. And some of the people that ended up joining that were people who imported some of that original anime. In fact, the creator of Astro Boy, Tesca, had visited more than once. He was like, these are my people. Mostly because, I mean, in late 70s, people didn't care about animation, much less Japanese animation. And so, you know, he would come out to see, well, the fans who were kind of, you know, promoting this. And in fact, another interesting thing is a man named Peter Chung. He was a member of CFO. He went on to create a thing for MTV called Ian Flux that was part of Liquid Television. And he's gone off. At the time, he was working at Disney. Like, Great Mouse Detective was in production at that time. But yeah, anime and furries, we have common history. And I find that really funny that a lot of anime people don't seem to realize that, although they did, more of them figured that out when Psy died. A lot of that started being talked about. A number of anime news papers, well, blogs, whatever, picked up on the story.
I thought considering the first con was like your first con ever was meant to be like furry stuff, but actually my first con ever, just con period, was Comic-Con in Montreal, and I was a cosplayer. Ooh. I used to cosplay as Master Chief from Halo 3. I still have the armor. It's made out of fiberglass. Yes. I still have it. I saw furries a couple times when we were doing. I was with this group that I'm a co-founder called Heroes of Hope, and we would gather funds for people. And the thing is, like, a lot of people, they recognize my character, but the younger audience kind of got scared. And when you make a kid cry, we call it having first blood for some reason.
Oh, no.
So the first person that makes a kid cry gets first blood, we call it. And we ended up starting to have furries come over and join us for gatherings and fun collecting. And they were never getting first bloods. And I was like, you know what? I like the energy they're putting out. I think that is super cool. So this is kind of how I got interested into the fursuit aspect of the community. And I ever since I've been like, dude, I want to make a fursuit and I want to go to a con. And that's how I went to Fernal Equinox.
When I went to my first convention, I didn't have a fursuit, but I had a pipe cleaner fursuit. It was a pipe cleaner costume, completely made of pipe cleaners. It had a head
awesome.
At that time, but eventually I made a head, paws, feet, and a tail, almost completely out of pipe cleaners, a trash bag, a pool noodle, and some felt and shoes.
Oh. Whoa. Oh,
I love it when people do weird stuff like that. I knew a guy who did a carpet foam superhero. So he'd make an entire superhero costume out of the weird carpet foam. Though
that's
I know
so
some
cool.
people like cosplayed as like the Hilton rug, like this infamous rug pattern. They'd make costumes out of that.
Oh,
which
my God.
They got cease and desist from that.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
What was the fandom like in its early days? And for everyone else, what was the fandom like in the early days for you?
It's very similar. I mean, everything that happens at a modern furry con, you know, happened then, just a smaller scale. There were differences in that, say, late 80s and early 90s, there weren't a lot of safe spaces for queer people. And a lot of surprisingly, a lot of queer people were showing up at conventions, which did cause a lot of strife with a certain small, loud, not very open early fans. But there was a lot more sketching, free sketching in black sketchbooks. There was a lot more physical art. Art shows were really big. They got very, very big. I mean, up until digital art started becoming a lot more popular, and then, like, that did cause, like, a decline. Nobody really was accepting digital art in art shows because people kind of wanted those originals. The same sort of, you know, goofy bullshit, you know, happened. At those cons, I mean, you got a lot more fursuits, you know, piled, you know, in the lobby of a hotel, you know. But I'm sure that stuff that sort of thing happens here. You're just people like collapsing in on each other. They're not that dissimilar now, despite what certain people say. Like, those early cons were not wild and untamed. I mean, hell, regular science fiction conventions were pretty wild. We got footage to prove it. I mean, we're no more wild than any of the other, you know, fan-based groups at the time. Although in our case, it was a lot more people of varying sexual orientation showing up, and, you know, the occasional people wearing leather, which, let's be clear, that happened at science fiction cons too. People just like dressing up.
Even in the 2000s, like, even queer culture still really wasn't accepted, even though the LGBT had just started becoming more mainstream, people were learning about it. But to be fair, queer people still weren't accepted regardless, because we're still in that stereotypical stages of, gay people are trying to make you gay. They weren't born gay, not born gay, but turned gay, something like that. I guess I was a closeted gay for the longest time, but I really didn't recognize it until few years ago, actually, when I was 25 or 24, until I realized, like, oh, this man is hot.
Oh.
Get under, well, you know, get out of the closet.
The early fandom, it was, in hindsight, a safe space for queer people in a time when there wasn't a lot. Well, there were, but not kind of like the gay nerds, the geeky fans, and that did cause, you know, problems at the early fandom. We can go deep in the history, but you could see some of that's covered in the fandom documentary by Ash Coyote. Oh God, people used to blame Mark and Rodney for making the entire fandom gay, which I think is impressive. We used to joke that it was like, people used to blame them for it, and you know, at the time we're like, how. You know, but looking back, I'm like, yeah, own that. Yeah, you did. You totally did. And technically, it was kind of a very political thing. Mark and Rodney, a queer couple in the late 80s, were running a convention. You know, that is kind of a statement. And it ended up being kind of a safe space, more or less. And then the internet kind of, the internet happened and all that, and it blew up.
My early days in the fandom were very much me being the silent audience member. I was not artistic. I didn't submit stories or anything, no music, no videos, but I appreciated them. I felt very isolated from the rest of the fandom because I didn't know anyone. I don't know if that's because I was not as outgoing then as I am now. Because now, like 15 years later, here I am with all of you guys. But we've got VR chat. We've got Discord communities. Like, the post-COVID digital age has really made the furry fandom so much more than it was before COVID. Back when I was in high school, it was a brand new thing. I was just discovering the artwork at the time. And, oh, look, here's a story someone wrote. Oh, this is nice. It went into different animations, and then TikTok came out, and I started following all of you on TikTok. It was a really, like, oh yeah, these are definitely my people.
Me, back in the day when I started in the fandom, honestly, it didn't change that much. It just got more crowded over time. Like, every time I would go to con, it would be like below 1,000 people. After taking a break for 5 years and then going to FWA, where there's like 15,000 people, then I was like, oh, God, there's so many people here. It's crazy. But I gotta say, whether there's like 5,000 people or 15,000 or 500, you stay just as busy. I always had stuff to do, people to see, people to talk with. So I didn't notice much of a difference, though I've noticed that back then we didn't have VR chat. We didn't have Twitter as much. Twitter was not as, you know, popular as it is today. So it was mostly for affinity, the way we message and contacted each other. There were probably other platforms, but not that I'm aware of. And I know that in my local area, we use Facebook a lot. Because Facebook is really good for hosting events. The event feature inside Facebook is super powerful. I still use it today, but mostly for personal reasons now. I don't really use it for the furry aspect. I feel like now with the advent of, like, with the internet, we're all more connected with content creators, you know, TikTok, YouTube, and all that. We kind of all connected a little bit more. So it's really cool for that.
15 years ago, I know LiveJournal was really big. Skype was used a lot until Microsoft completely wrecked it. Second Life got pretty popular with certain groups, and quite a number of them are in here for various reasons. Those were some of the bigger platforms, at least, for Affinity.
MSN Messenger.
Yeah.
Although, oh my god.
I think
yeah.
Skype was big. I think Skype was big with a lot of at least a lot of people I'd known.
I remember.
But
Skype.
Have you That's ever true. Heard of Google Hangouts?
Oh god, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have, no, I was, I have I so say, many stories
I was
from
on that
place.
Oh.
I had a MySpace from the original time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, when it first was out.
I remember the internet before there was a web. I mean, I got on the internet in 89. It was only text-based then. And mostly it was, you know, I got in via hacking into university computers. I won't talk about that. I have a very checkered past in the 80s.
Yeah. Alrighty. Our beautiful supporters, stay updated with the Top Dog Podcast by subscribing to our YouTube channel and ringing that notification bell. Follow us on your favorite podcast platforms. Hit that follow button to be notified with every new episode. Share the love by leaving us a lovely quick review. And connect with our community by joining our Discord or Telegram community, or both, because both of them are so much fun. You'll find all the necessary links down below in our link tree. We appreciate your support.
Hey, Top Dogs fan. If you're looking to snag awesome perks while supporting us, explore our server subscription on Discord or Patreon. By becoming a podcast supporter, you'll access exclusive behind-the-scenes footage, join supporter meetups, express yourself with custom hand-draws emojis featuring the Top Dogs team, and chat with the podcast team and fellow fans. Plus, we got the brand new After Dog show for mature audiences only at just $2.99 a month. Craving more? Upgrade to the Podcast Supporter Plus for $5.99 a month. Enjoy episode voting, suggest podcast episodes, and become part of our live audience. Plus, unlock exclusive sneak peeks of upcoming ideas, merch drops, and much more in the future. There's no obligations to join these subscriptions, but your support genuinely makes a huge difference for all of our team. And to those who've already subscribed, a heartfelt thank you sincerely from the bottom of our hearts.
Look, I need to feed my car addiction. Go buy it. Go buy it. I need my car parts.
Desperate words what? From a desperate man. What was everyone's favorite experience in the fandom? Or fursuiting, or just an experience that involved furry? Like, there for me, my favorite experience was when there was this young girl in a wheelchair and we were all fursuiting around, and her mom came over to us and was like, hey, can you guys take a picture with her? She's like reacting to you guys, and like, it's really cool. She had this beautiful smile on her face and she couldn't move her arms very well, but she was like trying to reach for us and like try to pet us and stuff. And God, her mother was like almost crying because she was so happy because her daughter was like interacting and like trying to interact with us, and like she started like gushing about how amazing it was that we were there at this event and like trying to just help people and bring smiles. And it was just a little convention that will always stick to me for the rest of my life.
There was one moment that was not quite as emotional like that, but there is a film that was very important to the early fandom called Animalympics. And in 2010, but originally Animalympics was supposed to be two animated specials for television. You know, Summer and Winter Games, but Winter and Summer Games, and 1980 Olympics in Russia got boycotted. And so the Summer Games never got shown, and the company mashed them together as a really messy kind of film. But Mark had the only recording of the original broadcast of the Winter Games. And when the fans got a hold of the movie version, they're like, oh, well, this one says Winter Games, that one says Summer Games. So they reproduced the Summer Games special, but with fans. They made their own cut of that. And they used to show both specials at early conventions and early parties, and it was kind of like the Rocky Horror of the fandom. They wore those tapes out. I recovered the Winter Games and like cleaned it up, and then reproduced the Summer Games special. Various sources, much higher quality, Blu-ray and Laserdisc and all that. In 2010, it was the, oh God, I don't want to do them, a 30-year anniversary of of Animal Olympics, and at Califer, I was running a video room, and so we're having a showing of that, but one of the producers was in the area at the time for a audiophile show, and we invited him, and he accepted, and we got to show him the Winter Games special, which he hasn't seen since 1980. Because it doesn't exist anymore, except for the copy Mark recorded. I had stuff that was never in the movie. And we showed that and had a big kind of like Q&A with the man, and it was an amazing experience. And it's just one of those fun fan moments. The most heartwarming moment, honestly, was unfortunately when Mark died. We were going through, well, even before that, when he was going through the hospital and having GoFundMe and having that much of the community reach out and donate, because we went through 7 hospitals and an ICU unit. We're still kind of unpacking all that. But when he died, he trended worldwide on Twitter as far all over the world. We're like seeing him trending in Singapore. You know, it was one of those moments when I realized, you know, like even both me and Rodney never realized even how far the reach had been. And that's probably one of the more amazing moments.
I think the thing that stands out to me, it's probably the person who got my first fursuit hug last year. It was actually before FWA last year. I met up with Arden Wolfsky in person. And he brought his fursuit, and he gave me my first fursuit hug.
Aww.
Aww.
It is so soft.
Aww. Oh my God. Fluffy. When I first got my first fursuit, and I went to FWA with it, and I was excited to wear it. But even though you as a person are excited to wear your first fursuit that you ever have, or ever made, or just wear in general, I was enjoying, like, people coming up to me and asking for a hug and taking pictures of me. And honestly, I enjoy doing that because it makes other people happy as well besides yourself to give them that experience of a fursuit hug like this one had.
Honestly, it's without knowing meeting my husband for the first time. I didn't expect it at
adorable.
First, but yeah, we were just friends, but we when we saw each other, we immediately connected for some reason. We didn't know what it was back then, but we found out that it was love, you know. It just took a little while to develop, but I felt this connection immediately, and it's something I'm very grateful for. But also, recently at FWA, I finally met the person that inspired me and kept me going when I wanted to give up on making my first fursuit, and that was Telephone. I've seen her videos, and I think she's adorable. I love her fursuit. She had it from the longest of time. She still has, like, the same design as when I first saw her 12, 13 years ago. And I met her, and I told her, you're the reason why I built myself a fursuit. Thank you so much. And she was super cool. She was super humble about it. And, yeah, that made me really happy.
Eno is honestly one of the kindest people I've ever met in the fandom. For people who are interested in learning more about the fandom, its history, or even joining it, what are some advice that you'd give them?
I would say, if you want to know about the early history of the fandom, watch Ash Coyote's documentary, The Fandom. It's on YouTube, free, wonderfully, brilliantly edited, put together documentary. Ash has quite a few other pieces about different sections. Besides the movie, they have other shorter form pieces, and those are good, well done primer. Another one, surprisingly done by an outsider, is through the Rabbit Hole. Down the Rabbit Hole's video on the history of the fandom, and they did a really decent job. And surprising, most of the images that appear in it were stuff I scanned. That probably goes the other thing is conference.com, which is the name of it was the domain for the first furry convention. I turned it into an archive, and there's thousands of documents scanned going all the way back to the 70s. So older fanzines, all the con books for conference, and a lot of other esoteric stuff is another good resource.
I think maybe for the new furries, try your best to avoid the drama. If you have questions, find a gray muzzle or some other person that's been in the fandom for a while.
Because
they can give you the best answers without being overly dramatic.
Yeah, I know, you know, that's a good thing.
Oh yeah, I'm so numb to that at this point. It's like, oh, look at that drama happening over there.
Most of the drama that happens on Twitter in general are usually people in their late, like, teens or, like, early 20s.
Well, you know, this is funny. You know, I saw a whole thing about the whole furry discourse. You know, the same topics get rehashed over and over again every few years.
Oh,
and kind of dawned on me, somebody ran the numbers, and conventions are kind of growing, like, almost exponentially lately, these days, post-pandemic. And it kind of reminded me of something that happened in the early internet. They called it the Eternal September. Because, like, in the early internet, every September, internet culture would go nuts. You know, netiquette would be bad. Because it was all these new college students joining, you know, going to college and suddenly getting access to the net. And just all this chaos would happen until AOL connected to the internet. And they call that Eternal September. That's when all of the everything just was that constantly. And I'm realizing that's happening in the fandom now. Every time this furry discourse is, like, being rehashed, it's basically the young kids coming and going, ah, I know what's going on. And it's like, yeah, we've been over this. You know, it's just the same bullshit over and over being argued. It's like, it's almost like, oh, hey, you're joining the fandom. Here's a fact file. You know, please, you read this at your own leisure. Let's not talk about these things. Here's how it's been debated before. It would be wonderful if we had a service like that.
I try to ignore all the furry drama. Like, if I see anything on Twitter or
my
YouTube,
God, I was
I'm like,
you to come to me.
What? Oh,
sorry.
Oh God, you know what? You know, phantom sense in here. I apparently have phantom leash.
Ah, okay, that would explain it.
What? Oh,
no, that's mine.
Web.
No, he's mine.
What?
No, he's mine.
I'm giving him pets.
I grabbed the leash to give him a head pat. Yes, exactly. I've known Chenga for quite a while. I think Chenga was my first. In my first year of VR chat, you were part of my friends.
Oh, yeah.
I've known you for very long time.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember how we met. Well, I know we crossed paths a bunch, but also, you know, the whole content creation thing. I mean, I think I had already started TikTok by then, by the time I ran it. You know, and I saw your TikToks, and how the heck is he getting away with that? Damn.
Oh,
wait,
dude.
Which one? Mine or him?
I found that white line and I'm dancing on it.
Oh, God, you are dancing on that. When I saw you do Industry Baby, and I'm like, how is this still? I've gotten, like, community violations for things like, wait, how? What? I don't know.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Be gay.
Oh. No, I think we're good.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of
no, I
think
like
we
that.
Busted
I like
the market
that.
A little bit.
I like that. Yeah, be gay. Yeah, be gay. Yeah.
Be happy or be gay.
Be gay. Be gay.
Yeah, no, alrighty. No. Yeah. Be gay is a treat.
I just want to make a little formal announcement. Now, guys, as you guys probably heard, we are the Top Dogs. Most of the Top Dog staff is going to be attending FWA 2024. Now, sadly, we didn't get a panel this year. So what's going to happen is we're going to record a live episode on Friday, which is which date? I don't remember. On
10th.
Friday.
I don't remember.
10th.
Friday 10th.
10th of May.
We're going to be doing a live episode recording in my suite. I rented a deluxe suite, so we have enough room for everybody. And it's going to be followed up immediately after the recording by the Top Dogs community party. We're going to have DJ Xavier. Xavier is going to be our DJ. Please make sure you follow our Twitter. We're going to be making making a final announcement with the poster, the time, the specific times and everything. So make sure you follow our Twitter account at Top Dogs Podcast. So, on that note, I hope everybody have a fantastic night, a fantastic day, and hopefully you learn a little bit more about the fandom and its history. I think it's important to know where we come from. So you guys take
sure
care and have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Get it.